Meir Kahan was a very young teenager when World War II began in 1939. By 1944, when the Nazis entered a small village town in Hungary, he was about 18, 19 years old. He survived the war. He wrote an autobiography of his terrible experiences in the Holocaust. He called the book Between My Father and the Old Fool. My father's a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, my father in heaven. The Old Fool references Chazal, which refers to the Yetzer Hara as an old fool. Many, if not all, of the events in the book that he relates, his horrific, horrific experience, depicts it through that prism of the old fool versus my father, as he called it. Something bad happens, the old fool whispers into his ear, "You're still going, you're still doing what your father said." He has a battle within himself, and despite the difficulty he fights, he holds on, he listens to his father in heaven. I want to show you just, hopefully at the time, three incidences that he mentions among many, many. The stories speak for themselves, no need to elaborate or even comment. Hopefully, something will resonate, touch our neshamas, which perhaps will be able to margish some pain. And maybe even if we're unable to shed tears, at least we might be able to feel tears forming in our eyes, even if they don't fall to the ground. In March 1944, the Nazis invade Hungary. By April, the ghettos were set up. In his town, the next day was April 15th. It was Shabbos, was also the last day of Pesach. That's when the Germans surrounded the town. Soldiers burst into his home, and they demanded to know where the wagons were. They were supposed to have wagons. They were supposed to hire wagons to take them to the train station, to take them to wagons to take them to the ghetto. Meir's father said to him, the driver, Gavrila, a non-Jew, was not there. He didn't come yet. They hired him. So the soldier said, "Fetch him." So Meir went out, happy not to be in the line of fire, so to speak. As he was walking and running through the town, he saw total chaos, people being thrown from their homes, the soldiers beating up people that didn't want to listen. As he's walking, he looks up, and standing next to him is a girl he knows, Sarah. She was his age, maybe a little younger. And she asks him a question. And he says, "This happened so many years ago, I'm not sure you remember. Do you remember telling us about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim?" So Meir says, "Remind me. You know, that part stuck in my head, the story about the 400 Jewish girls who were taken prisoners, sent by ship to Rome. Do you remember telling us about it?" "I'm not sure, but I remember what happened. They asked the Rabbanim whether they could be held accountable. In Olam HaBa, they took their own lives. They didn't want to have their souls defiled by what the Romans planned to do with them. The rabbis assured them, although suicide was a terrible sin, they will not be penalized under the circumstances." And so the girl asked, "Do you remember what the girls did?" And Meir says, "Yes, I remember. They jumped into the sea, all 400. She took a deep breath and she said the following: "A group of us girls here in Vishuva, which was the name of the town, they made a pact to die before we allow ourselves to be violated. We're not afraid of death, but we don't want to come to the next world with a tainted soul. What do you think? She's asking Meir. He answered. He says, you can't ask me a question like that. This is a question of life and death. Why don't you ask your father? He's a Talmud Chacham. There are many Rabbanim in vision. She said, we asked. So what did they say? Meir responded. They said, have faith, have emunah. Yeshua Hashem Kerafayim. We will be delivered from this misfortune. That's the most they will tell us. But it's not enough. What if Pastor Shalom, we're not delivered? What if he turns his face away from us this terrible time? Didn't the people in Yerushalayim have faith when the Romans were batting down the wall? Didn't the people in Germany and Rhine, where the Crusaders came, didn't they have faith? Meir had nothing to say. He writes, I chewed on my knuckles, I looked on the ground for a minute or two. What was I supposed to say to this girl? Ribbono shel Olam, I thought desperately, he says, look at your pure Jewish girls. What are they worried about right now? Not survival. Not a little food to still their hunger. Not safety. They're worried about coming to you in Olam Haba with tainted soul. Ribbono shel Olam, haven't we suffered? Do you really want these girls to commit suicide? That was one of the dilemmas that he had to deal with at the time. The parents were deported. They were taken to the ghetto. The driver came. The wagons took them to the ghetto. Now, Meir had been drafted to the Munkatabra in Hungary, because Hungary had aligned itself with Germany at the very beginning of the war. The Nazis did not invade Hungary right away. They had a puppet government, and many of the many horrible decrees that were in Germany were transferred to Hungary. One of them was a Munkatabra, which was a labor battalion. It was attached to the army. Only Jews were in it, and they were treated horribly. They had no uniforms. There was in the wintertime, they didn't have warm clothing and so on. And they had to do hard labor. In one instance, they had to travel to a distant town and had to repair the drainage system with primitive tools. This went on for quite some time. And in a different instance, they had to assist the Hungarian army who were fighting alongside the Germans. This is towards the end of the war already, where the Allied bombers were coming over Europe and bombing incessantly. So they were anti-aircraft gunners, which the soldiers were manning. And this labor battalion, the Munkatabra, they were responsible for dragging the mortars from where they were kept and had to drag them to where the anti-artillery guns were shooting. The soldiers there were protected because they were behind these encampments which they had built. But the Jews that were running were open. They could be killed any second if the bombers would come down. But that was not a concern of the soldiers. And so that was one of the other jobs that they had to do. It was there also for several months. One day, Sergeant announces, we are marching to Germany. Gather your things, duffel bags, we're marching hundreds of miles to Germany. What had happened? The puppet government had fallen and the Nazis had invaded Hungary at this time. And they started the roundups, the deportations to Auschwitz. And this labor battalion, they did not have enough trains to take them, and so back to Germany. And so they were ordered to literally walk by foot to Germany. And our mayor understood that this was literally a death sentence, going back to Germany. It was nothing. And all he could think about was escaping. He didn't have to wait long. It was a terrible rainstorm that the army had anticipated was going to take a long time. They arranged to be in a farmhouse by a rich woman and her daughter. She had a very large farm with many, many barns, and they were able to house the entire battalion. Not exactly in beds and things, but on straw together with the animals. But it was enough for the Hungarians, for the soldiers, and enough for the lousy Jews, as they called them. One night, as they're waiting for the order to move out, the daughter of the farmhouse, this daughter comes in, and somehow she befriends Mayer. She offers him milk. She offers him extra food. They had very limited rations, and she would come back night after night. One night she says to Mayer, "I have a plan. I looked at her and says, she had a key in her hand. She says, this is a key to your life. There's a tool shed behind the barn. It's locked with a padlock. Stays locked until after the winter. There's running water. There's a toilet, an old mattress up against the wall. I've stocked the shed with food and blankets. And you can stay there without anyone knowing you're here. I won't even tell my mother. Later tonight, you'll go to the shed, you'll use the key to open the padlock." And she explained to him a very complicated situation. The third board to the left of the door is loose. Once you're inside, you'll move the board, you'll reach outside, you'll lock the padlock. And so it'll appear as if the shed is locked. And you can stay there as long as you need until the army moves out and you can go and you can leave. "I agree. How can I ever thank you?" he said. As she leaves, he says to him, "Do you have the key?" I touched my shirt pocket. He says, "I have it." "My first reaction," he writes, "I was excited. At last, my opportunity to escape. In a few days, I'll go back to Budapest and wait. The war will be over very soon, and I'll be out of this army. But I realized it wasn't so simple. This girl, her name was Mariska, she won't let me go so easily. If I went without her knowledge, she'll turn against me. She could report me, level out any accusations. What will I do then? Maybe I'll be her prisoner. Maybe I could tell her I have to take care of some business. I doubt it." Now he writes, "I'm surprised at you, Mayor. I heard an inner voice say, have you forgotten everything you learned about Jewish law? Don't you know saving your life overrides just about everything in the Torah? Don't you know you even violate Shabbos in order to save your life?" This inner voice was persuasive, but I was still suspicious. Maybe these arguments weren't inspired by pure motives. Maybe they were by my base instincts. Mayer, he goes back to the shed. He's fingering the key. He thinks he hears a voice, "Don't go." Turns around, there's nobody there. Continues walking towards the shed. He's fingering the key in the lock, and his hands are shaking. He can barely open the lock. He can't even get the key into the lock. Tries again. Doesn't work. Tries again. He says, by this time, he was nervous. Maybe someone was going to come out and see him. He said, "You know what? I'm going back. I'll try again tomorrow night." He goes back to the barn. At this point, he throws up a tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he says, "Thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for stopping me. But he wasn't sure if he was going to be able to withstand that test. The next night he took the key and he threw it as far as he could. That was the second incident. The third, again, of many, many incidences, a little while later, he was somehow able to get away from the battalion. He had had papers, he had had false papers from some people in Hungary that he had met that were forged papers. And he thought he was going to travel. He was used those papers to travel. And the papers looked pretty decent. But what was unbeknownst to him was that there was a spy that the Hungarian soldiers were looking for. And so, despite the fact that he really had decent papers, they were questioning everybody. And so when they came to him on the train and they asked him for his papers, showed him his papers, and they didn't believe him. They grabbed him off the train, took him into headquarters, and they beat him terribly. One lieutenant, one soldier, this one, punching him in the face, in the stomach. He thought that he wouldn't be able to make it. At one point, he collapsed completely on the floor. They threw water on him to revive him. When he woke up, they began kicking him and beating him mercilessly. And finally, the sergeant gives him one kick in his stomach and he totally doubles over and he vomits all over the floor. He thought at this point it was over, but they weren't finished. The soldiers tell him, "Jew, look what you did to the floor here. You made it so dirty." And one turns to the other and says, "We should make him clean it up." "That's right. But we have no utensils. How should he do it?" So the other one says, "He should lick it up off the floor with all his strength." He had no choice, and that's what he did. And while he's doing this, the inner voice is talking to him. And he's saying, "Do you think you did the right thing by leaving Mariska? Maybe you should have stayed." Somehow, by some miracle, he survived that ordeal. And he went on. He was liberated, he was saved. And ultimately, he rebuilt his family and ended up writing the book. Hopefully, some of the stories, if it could touch us, if it did touch us, we should be inspired to be mishtatef b'tzaro during that horrible, horrible time during that Holocaust. We'll start the kinnah by the Baba Rebbe.